JC2S, Part 1, Chapter 6, Science, Theology, Medicine. Number 1A.
It annuls false evidence and saith to the five material senses, having eyes ye see not, and ears ye hear not, neither can you understand. To weave one thread of science through the loom of time is a miracle in itself. The risk is stupendous. It costs Galileo what? This awful price. The temporary loss of his self-respect. His fear overcame his loyalty. The courage of his convictions fell before it. Fear is the weapon in the hands of tyrants. Now, we see that this is the very message that we, 100 years later, are going to be taking together this week. That whole message that science is absolute and final, and that it is revolutionary in its very nature. This is the subject, then, of that sixth chapter, Science, Theology, and Medicine, in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. It has, you know, as a chapter, its place value within the textbook as the sixth chapter. And we know then that science and health, through our study of the thousand-year periods of biblical history, appears as predominantly the textbook for the 6,000-year period, that period with its accentuation on truth. The truth consciousness, the Christ consciousness, or we would say science and health, science of the whole truth consciousness, or science of the healthy whole man. This textbook, we know then, is a textbook of what we call the Christian Science Matrix. And particularly, we find chapter 6 as that place value within the matrix of the Christ truth, reflecting the Christ truth. So we see then that the main tone and message then is that Christ truth of absolute Christian science, which translates God to idea. Therefore, we know in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy discusses that Christ operation on absolute Christian science as what? Christ or Emmanuel, or God with us, or she calls the Christ from absolute Christian science, the true idea of God, leading into all truth, furnishing us with absolute evidence. And then, with its impact on the relative, on Christian science, then that absolute statement of Emmanuel, God with us, that translation of God to each and every individual idea as a true idea of God leading into all truths, that has an impact. And that impact then is, on Christian science, the power of manifestation in spite of error. Here we then see that she will define the Christ as that which casts out evils and heals the sick, of that which turns water into wine, of that which improves on a false sense. So, therefore, the message is always very powerful when we get a chapter which is on the diagonal of the matrix in the textbook, such as we have here, the Christ as the Christ. Here we get then the subject of how principle God translates itself to idea. And when that idea is understood in consciousness, retranslates out the belief within our consciousness that anything else is going on besides that idea of God. Hence we have as the subject of this chapter that science which is revolutionary, that science which governs changes. that science, which is revolutionary in its very nature through its Christ translation and retranslation, is changing the very nature of all sciences, is changing the very nature of all theology, it's changing the very nature of all medicine, and it's changing the very nature of our lives. It's changing the universe, including man. Now, this we see a little bit further if we go on and take a look then at the place value of the sixth chapter. And we see then that, again, it is with just another transparency showing us then a little bit more about its place value, that it is therefore the Christ in absolute Christian science, the translation of God to idea, or Emmanuel, God with us, or Emmanuel, mind with us, spirit with us, soul with us, principle with us, life with us, truth with us, love with us. Therefore, those basic constituents of science, of God, therefore being translated to every sphere of experience, and that has within itself the power of manifestation in spite of air. Therefore, that Christ is translating its constituents to every situation, retranslating out the false constituents of reality, which would be then the opposite of mind, which would be mortal mind. The belief that matter can be turned into its opposite, retranslating out matter, retranslating out the claim against soul, body, retranslating out the belief against principle of personalities, personal opinions, retranslating the belief against life as death, retranslating out of itself the belief against truth of mortal consciousness, mortal manhood, and retranslating out the claim against love of imperfection. So this chapter then gives us the translation of the true constituents of being, let's say the revelation of the true constituents of being, which are retranslating out the false constituents back into the true constituents of being. This is going on, as we'll see, this translation and retranslation of the Christ according to those structural laws of the Christ, those laws of the Christ in their self-operating, holistic, dimensional, structural, teleological nature, according to, we know, on the laws of the law of divine science, that law of divine self-organization, really that cybernetic law called the Holy Ghost in biblical terminology, which is really then that law of the development of eternal life, truth, and love, that law appearing on the level of the Christ, an absolute Christian science, as a law of individualization or specification, appearing on the level of Christian science then, as a law of translation and retranslation, or the law of reformation. These holistic, dimensional, structural, teleological laws then are the laws, as we will see and go over, which is governing the science of changes. Now, Mrs. Eddy then goes on in that section on science and senses in miscellaneous writing, talking about now what is our response back to this science that governs changes. She says, and I go on, just reading a bit further, she says, men and women of the 19th century, are you called to voice a higher order of science? Then obey this call. Go if you must to the dungeon or to the scaffold, but take not back the words of truth. How many are there ready to suffer for a righteous cause, to stand a long siege, take the front rank, face the foe, and be in the battle every day? Then she talks about Jesus' response back to this science that governs changes, which is a revolutionary science. She says of Jesus, "In no other one thing seemed Jesus of Nazareth more divine than in his faith in the immortality of his words. He said, 'Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away, and they have not. The winds of time sweep clean the centuries, but they can never bear into oblivion his words. They still live, and tomorrow speak louder than today. They are today as the voice of one crying in the wilderness, "Make straight God's path. Make way for health, holiness, universal harmony, and come up hither." The grandeur of the word, the power of truth, is again casting out evils and healing the sick. And it whispers, "This is science." So we get there quite a tonality in our response back. Evidently, this science that governs changes is revolutionary. It isn't a extrapolation, as we know, of the physical standpoint. It isn't an extrapolation, as we would like, of the human standpoint, of the second degree. It is a complete change. Evidently, Mrs. Eddy is saying here, that this change asks us, are we called to voice a higher order of science? It's a change that she even goes as far as to say, "Go if you must to the dungeon or scaffold, but take not back the words of truth." That's very powerful. I think as we go through this chapter, we're going to realize how these truths, these words that she's saying are probably a bit calm, probably not as strong as they sound now. Maybe she should have said it a bit stronger. Because when we go through this chapter, we're going to see how very difficult it is for us to be a Christian scientist, to really stick to this science of God, to really stick to the logic that is demanded from this chapter. We will see that it isn't always easy within our consciousness to voice this higher order of science. We'll see sometimes that maybe it's a little easier to cop out and work with the world's isms and ology, to resort to holding spirit in the grasp of matter, than it is really to voice this higher order of science. So we start out with that tonality. It's strong, but as we go on through the week, we'll see perhaps what she means by that power behind those words. Now, looking, and again, and this evening we're just getting together to have a nice little chat about the chapter. We really begin the chapter tomorrow. So we're just more or less having a conversation and vision of things to come when we actually begin the subject in the morning. But I just want to talk around it, so to speak, to give you the atmosphere or the feeling of what we will be discussing together this week. In considering that this chapter brings out the science that governs changes, we see that it is a science that then governs a rebirth that goes on within our consciousness. Yes, we could all say to everyone, we're studying a science that is requiring us to be born again. Mrs. Eddy says on page 108 in this chapter, under the science tone, "Mine is mine," as we will see when we get there, she says, "When apparently near the confines of mortal existence, standing already within the shadow of Death Valley, I learned these truths in divine science, that all real being is in God, the divine mind, and that life, truth, and love are all powerful and ever present, that the opposite of truth, called error, sin, sickness, disease, death, is the false testimony of the false material sense of mind and matter. This false sense evolves in belief, a subjective state of mortal mind which the same so-called mind names matter, thereby shutting out the true sense of spirit. Then under the marginal heading, New Lines of Thought, my discovery that erring mortal misnamed mind produces all the organisms and actions of the mortal body set my thoughts to work in new channels and led up to my demonstration of the proposition that mind is capital all, and that matter is not, as the leading factor in capital mind hyphen science. Here, if we listen, we begin to hear the science that is governing changes, the science of a rebirth that went on in Mrs. Eddy's consciousness. A science which really is the answer to the belief of death. The belief of death on an individual, collective, and universal standpoint. Now, she says, when apparently near the confines of mortal existence, standing already within the shadow of Death Valley, she says that she was at this standpoint called death. She says, I learned these truths in divine science. Something broke into her consciousness at that claim or belief of death, concerning truths in divine science. Something broke in from that standpoint where she began to see from divine science that all real being is in God, the divine mind, and that life, truth, and love are all powerful and ever present. Now, what she saw and what we will see is that without a new birth, we continue on, as the universe including man does, groping around in the material universe as enigma, groping around within this concept, as Jesus said, let the dead bury the dead. But she shows here that actually without the belief of a material birth, the belief of a matter universe, of a material birth, she says that she discovered that this whole question of death would never rise. She shows in this chapter that without the belief of a material birth, as I said, death would never arise. Therefore, she shows that it's a material birth that is the last enemy to be overcome, not death. She says in a letter to a student that mankind has reached the last enemy called birth and knows it not. Now, she shows then here that what she discovered then was really a rebirth to her, a science that governs changes. It was a born again. Not from the standpoint of the belief in matter or a material birth, but the belief of life in and of divine science. Born again from the standpoint of divine consciousness, which gives us our true divine origin. And it's when we are born again from the standpoint of divine science, she shows this handles the belief of a material birth, and with it, that experience called death, which is what she experienced. Now, to get a feeling of what she means to be born again from the standpoint of divine science, which handles that belief of material birth, which she calls the last enemy to be overcome, of which she handles in this chapter, not only individually, but collectively, and of big shocking awareness universally. She handles the belief of the universe as having a material birth and shows that the individual, collective and universal, is born again from divine science, that in order to answer this enigma that the universe is looking for of what happened at the time of the Big Bang, what happened before the Big Bang, this whole what is the origin of the universe, what happened before the Big Bang, all this is answered in this chapter. Quite interesting enough that on June the 13th, and I believe it was Time Magazine, is this whole huge article about the origin of the universe. I have it with me. We'll look at it as we go along. Filling the whole issue on what went on at the time of the Big Bang and what goes on before the Big Bang. What is the origin of the universe, and maybe what went on before what we call the origin of the universe? Not only in just one of our local magazines, but in the Christian Science Monitor itself, the same date, June 13th, 1988, 100 years later from her June 13, 1888, when she said that Christian Science is absolute and final, that it's revolutionary in its very nature, just exactly 100 years to the date, in the Christian Science Monitor comes starting out these articles on the origin of the universe, tracing what the physical sciences are saying about the birth of the universe. Where we look in this chapter, the answer's there. This chapter that she was indicating on June 13th, 1888, 100 years ago, that this chapter would answer the question of the origin of the universe, including man. Not from physical science, not from mental science, but from the science of God, and only from the science of God will it be answered. If we don't go out from the science of God, it remains an enigma. I think we begin to hear what she means, that are we ready to voice a higher order of science? Now, in handling this question of the second record of creation or a material birth, we could look at Genesis in the Bible, Genesis 1, chapter 1. We know that Genesis 1:1 gives us that whole standpoint, really, that in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. We get, and if we know the textbook, an absolute standpoint of that multidimensional universe out from the onlyness of God, from the level of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. When we look then at this point two, which is looking at the concept of the question that maybe something else is going on besides in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, where Mrs. Eddy interprets Genesis 1:1 as the infinite has no beginning. This word beginning is employed to signify the only science itself. That is the eternal verity and unity of God and man, including the universe, divine science. The creative principle, life, truth, and love is God. The universe reflects God. There is but one creator and one creation, absolute Christian science. This creation consists of the unfolding of spiritual ideas and their identities, which are embraced in the infinite mind and forever reflected. These ideas range from the infinitesimal to infinity, and the highest ideas are the sons and daughters of God. Genesis 1:1 with Mrs. Eddy's interpretation. Now that was not understood, because if it was understood, that's all we really need to know. That absolute statement there, Genesis 1:1, that answers everything. It shows us then that principle God is operating as a holistic, dimensional, teleological system. But Genesis 1:2 says, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. This is saying somehow that Genesis 1:1, that somehow that there is some type of darkness, ignorance about the face or the identity of these deep things of God. Therefore, the Spirit or order of God must move upon the identities of thought, the face of the waters.